If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonour others. It's not self-seeking. It's not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. But when I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now we see only a reflection, as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part. Then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love.
Well, good afternoon. I think my wife might be a little amused to know that I'm the answer to love. But it's quite easy to talk about. It's a very beautiful reading, isn't it? If you've never heard it before, or if you've heard it many, many times, it's very beautiful. And it's, of course, quite easy to talk about what love is. A bit harder to do it. You can pick any song, I would imagine. A little earlier than Foreigner, 1967, the Beatles would sing Love Is All You Need. And I guess you just that's what you did in the 60s, isn't it? That was all you needed. You sort of would sit around and smoke your curious substances and go to the Middle East, or for the Far East, and you just loved one another. That was the culture at the time. Just love, love, love. And you could make a song where you just repeat it over, love, love, love. And, you know, it was quite a nice tune. Of course, you know anything about that period of the Beatles' history, John Lennon and Paul McCartney were not talking to one another during the recording of the song. They'd had a complete falling out, which is slightly ironic when they're singing and harmonising All You Need Is Love. Within a year, John Lennon was divorced from his first wife. So, of course, you can write beautiful songs, you can say wonderful things about love. To live it out is that much harder. Now, look, we're jumping in for a few weeks into this chapter of the Bible, 1 Corinthians 13. It's in the middle of a letter, or towards the end of a letter, as some will know, written to the church in Corinth. And they are not full of love. If you read through the letter from the beginning, you'll know that they are an exceptionally gifted bunch of people, but they're not very loving. So Paul, in this letter, has already told them, chapter 3, they're jealous, chapter 4, they're proud, chapter 4, they're arrogant, chapter 5, they're boastful, chapter 6, they can't forgive one another, chapter 8, they're puffed up in their pride, chapter 10, they're self-seeking, chapter 11, they love to humiliate others. So when you come to this passage, and he says, love is patient, love is kind, it's a little bit pointed. Everything in verses 4 to 7, he's already said in the letter, you're no good at this. You've got a problem with this. So even though it is a very, very beautiful reading, Paul is not here really defining love. I think if you asked the Apostle Paul, what is love? He might say something like, you'd say in Romans chapter 5, this is love, that Christ died for us. Greater love has no man than this, that he would die for his friends. Self-sacrifice might be a definition of love. He's not defining love here. He's applying it into their situation. That's really what's going on. But this chapter works a bit like this. Verses 1 to 3, he talks about the necessity of love. And that's all we're going to look at today, three verses. And then we're going to go even more slowly when we get to chapter 4 to 7, when he defines love. Chapter 8 to 13, the permanence of love. But really just these three verses, verses 1, 2 and 3. Love is essential. So as I put it there, without love, look, gifts make you nothing. Sacrifice gains you nothing. But happily, we'll get there. Christ's love changes everything. Let me just say these three things. Look, without love, gifts make you nothing. So he can put chapter 13 and verse 1. If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I'm only a resounding gong or clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy, can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge. And if I have a faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. Absolutely nothing. Now, look, you might read through that list and not get very excited by it. Tongues of men, tongues of angels, knowing all knowledge. But you could easily just modernise the language, if you will. If I could name all the books of the Bible off by heart within 12 seconds, that's impressive. But if I have not love, you are nothing. Or perhaps for Mayfair, if I start a company and it grows very successfully, and people acclaim me, I get my cover on the face of Mayfair Times. You get that bizarre publication. It's mainly all adverts, really, for jewellery. But I have not love, I'm nothing. If I'm a millionaire, but have not love, I am nothing. Nothing. Absolutely zero. Not that your achievements count for nothing. Not that your gifts count for nothing. You are nothing. Nothing. Nada. Zilch. And that's meant to be a little bit punchy for us. We're meant to be a bit shocked by that. You can achieve greatness, but in God's eyes be viewed as zero. Even in a church setting, you could say, oh, but look, I've led lots of Bible studies. I've given lots of money to Christian churches and Christian charities. I've preached a sermon. I've done that sort of things. I tell people about Jesus. Yeah, but if you have not love, nothing. Jesus tells us just the same. He puts it at the end of the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew 7, verse 22, Jesus says, many will say to me on that day when he returns, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and in your name drive out demons, in your name perform many miracles? Then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. But we did all these things in your name. I never knew you. Nothing. You're nothing to me. So in these verses, verses 1 and 2, 5 gifts, and in the preceding chapter, chapter 12, the Corinthians are clearly very, very excited about these gifts. Tongues and gifts of prophecy and all mysteries, all knowledge. 5 gifts that they were very excited about. But as one man puts it, in this divine mathematics, 5 gifts minus 1 quality love equals 0. You're nothing without love. Counts for nothing. Now that's an unsettling truth. By the nature of a crowd gathered in Mayfair of a working lunchtime, you are successful people. You may not feel it, but you would be deemed such by the world. Here is a group of many talents. But unless you have the sort of love that's being spoken here, God looks down upon you and thinks, zero is the verdict on your life. That is unsettling. What's he actually talking about very briefly? If I speak in the tongues of men, well, that's probably just being able to speak multiple languages. We've got a guy at our church. I asked him the other day, actually, Brian, how many languages do you speak? Well, it depends what you mean. Well, I mean, how many languages can you speak to people? And he said, fluently, about 8. That's quite talented, isn't it? And he's only about 12 years old. He's about 20 years old. He's just ridiculous. The other day he was talking to someone from Africa. What language are you speaking? Swahili. When did you learn Swahili? I'm learning it at the moment. Why? It was just the next language. You know, I did Arabic last year and it seemed like, oh, whatever, that's brilliant. But that's probably the gifts of tongues of men, speaking in multiple languages, probably. Of angels, well, that's clearly an escalation, a step up. What does that mean? No one really knows. But it sounds very impressive. But if I can speak amazingly but do not have love, I'm just a resounding gong, clanging cymbal. I don't know what sort of music you have at your church. We do occasionally have drums and a drum kit. If I'd brought with me this lunchtime a cymbal and just bashed it for 20 minutes, you would leave. You would leave. You'd probably leave before 20 minutes. At first, you think, oh, what's this gimmick? And then he's just going, and he's going, and that's all it is. And actually, after a while, probably in the room this sort of size, probably after about 30 seconds, you'd do this and this. And it's not nice. And Paul is saying, yeah, you might think you've got the gift of the gab, You may have terrific patter when you meet clients. You might be very personable in a church setting. If you've got love, oh, I tell you what, you're just really annoying. You're just a pain to listen to, actually. Sorry about that. Verse 2 has a sort of sense of escalation to it as well. I think the gift of prophecy, foretelling the future probably in this context, fathoming all mysteries and all knowledge. That's impressive, isn't it? You just know the answer to everything. A faith that can move mountains, that isn't just normal saving faith. That's sort of exceptional confidence and trust. But haven't loved you, well, you're nothing. Now, I don't know about you and me, about you, it makes me ask the question, what about what about seriously able or gifted people that God does seem to use to do great good, but are unloving? What do you do with that sort of thing? What do you do with, I don't know the details of their life, but someone like a Bob Geldof has clearly done an enormous work for charity. He's raised lots of money for starving people in Africa. By all accounts, he's a complicated guy to get on quite well with. What do you make of someone like that? Or in a secular setting, completely secular setting, a Steve Jobs, he's clearly achieved a lot, didn't he? I mean, he achieved fabulous company he raised up and all sorts of technology that we benefit from. But by all accounts, he's a slightly tough bloke to work for. So what do you make of these sort of things? Well, of course, God is very kind. And in his kindness, he uses all sorts of people to do things to benefit the world. So yeah, undoubtedly, Bob Geldof has done an enormous amount to benefit charity and the impoverished of Africa. But he still may be nothing by God's verdict. God can use people to do all sorts of good, and yet it does them what is of no benefit to them. You can get that in a church setting. You might think, oh, well, I was enormously helped by this Bible teacher for years, or this man in church, this woman in church for years, and then they all this time they were having an adulterous affair. What does that mean? Does that mean everything they taught me is a lie? No. God can use people for good, even though they're compromised. He's amazing like that. That's part of his grace. It just means that for that individual, they may be nothing. Does them no good, no benefit. Without love, gifts make you nothing. Now, before we move on, Paul never knocks the gifts. He never says anything wrong with them. So whatever gifts you've got, if you're a Christian, use them in church. If you're very good financially and can help out, use them. If you're very good at explaining the truths of the Bible to people, use your gifts. Use your gifts. Don't not use them. That would be perverse. He just say, make sure you do them with love. You want a brief moment of interaction? You could, if you've got a pen, you could take your sheet, and this is genuine. This is not a rhetorical observation. And I'm putting the number 1, and then you can write after it, I don't know, let's have 7 zeros, which I think is 10 million. So you could have that. So 10 million pounds. 10 million pounds is very useful, I'm told. I could do a lot of good with 10 million pounds. There's an enormous potential to do good with 10 million pounds. I tell you, if you take off the one, you got nothing. The one is fairly key to the whole check or the whole sum of money. And that's what Paul is saying here. Gifted people have got enormous potential to do good. But if it's not with love, they're nothing. It's just nothing. Look, without love, gifts make you nothing. Nothing. Then verse 3, almost there. Without love, sacrifice gains you nothing. Verse 3. If this is, I think, even more surprising to us. Verse 3. If I give all I possess to the poor, that's impressive, give over my body to hardship, that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Those are two impressive things. Giving everything to the poor. Now, in every culture, I think, we view giving away money as love in action, probably. That's viewed as a virtuous thing. Giving over my body to hardship or torture, you could translate that. Or even giving up your life. Well, generally, that's viewed as a good thing. Although, I guess in the 21st century, maybe a bit more nervous about that. You do get suicide bombers who give up their life for their cause. And clearly there's no love there. It's entirely possible to give up your life with nothing but hatred in your heart. You could do that. But look, again, Paul is not criticising these actions. He does them. He gives away his money. He gives of himself. He gives his life for the sake of others. He's just observing that without love, it's pointless. Now, question. Here's a question. How do you give away all you possess without love? Because generally giving away stuff, giving away is kindness, isn't it? Well, I guess most of us have some experience of that in some sense. It can be out of guilt. You know, you get the charity muggers on the street, sort of loom into your face. Look at this suffering person, don't you want to do something? Or even worse, they ring at your doorbell. Look at this suffering person, you must give some money. Just take it and go away. Sometimes it's guilt provokes us to give. It can be all sorts of things. But again, without love, it doesn't really work. Let me put it this way. Imagine a wife says to her cold and distant husband, I really wish you'd love me. And he says, for goodness sake, woman, what is your problem? I go out and earn money. I come home. I wash dishes. I help out with the childcare. What is your problem? You do useful things, but I want your love. I want you to love me, not just perform work. I want you to love me. Me. Not just the kids, not just the house, me. I want your affection. And there is a difference between just doing stuff and having affection, love. Sometimes generosity can just be a form of selfishness. I just do my bit in order to get people off my case. Sometimes it can be worse than that. I think of a family member in my own family who is addicted to gambling, and it has ruined his life. He's now about 40 years old. Once a year, he'll go home to see his mother. And she allows him to come home and allows him to take from her purse, allows him to, you know, he's taken her bank cards before and emptied her bank accounts. And she kind of knows this is going to happen. It happens every year. He comes home once a year and does this. But she allows it. And you say, why do you let him do that? And she said, well, he's my son. And, you know, it's the only time I get to see him. Is that love? There's a sort of bizarre codependency going on there, isn't there? Actually, the loving thing for her son is to not allow him to feed his habit. It's to insist he gets some help. But just sort of allowing, well, it's not. She gives, undoubtedly. She gives all she possesses to her poor son and goes without herself. But is it love? No, it doesn't really work. Codependency is not love. See, the unsettling thing about a passage such as this, even just three verses, it sort of, okay, they're your actions, but what drives your actions? What's the motive behind them? Why are you doing this? It's why it's very beautiful, but it is unsettling. But without love, gifts make you nothing, sacrifice gains you nothing. But let's just start to think about this. Christ's love changes everything. Changes everything. And what he's talking about here is a love that is internal. A love that's within the heart. A love that shapes who we are. Gifts, you could be the most gifted person around, but they're external to you in a sense. You could be the most gifted linguist, the most gifted financier, the most gifted salesman. But they're external in a sense. They're not in the heart. It's a bit like having fabulous clothing, fabulous expensive suits, or dripping it in diamonds and gold. I mean, it's all very nice, but it's external to you. It doesn't really affect internally who you are. And it's the same sort of thing with gifts. You can be highly gifted, but they don't change who you are, the person underneath. The sort of love he's speaking of here is a love that's changed the inner person so that gifts are exercised out of, well, out of concern for others. Gifts are always used, talents are always used altruistically. They're always used to put the spotlight upon other people rather than upon ourselves. And this is not something you just whip up in your own heart. It's a supernatural love. It's an expression of faith that comes through trusting in Jesus Christ. Elsewhere, the Bible put it simply in these terms that John puts. We love because he first loved us. Now, I can't pretend to try and explain that to you in 2-3 minutes. But it's fundamental to how the Christian lives. We change our behaviour, or our behaviour is changed because of God's love for us. We try and put in these terms. There was an article that appeared in the paper a little while ago by a little girl who was adopted. Well, she's writing it as an adult. Her name's Jamie. It's a story. She was brought up in the States. The article is just simply called "What Might Have Been." Jamie knew she was adopted as an infant. That was obvious. She grew up in the family, not her natural family. She knew from an early age that her mother had died. Her mum died in a car crash when she was a toddler. But it was only in her early 20s she decided, well, I'm actually going to find out as much as I can about my birth family. I love my family. This is my family, where I've grown up. But I want to find out about the family or who my parents were. So she managed to track down on Facebook, as you can do these days, her half-sister, and went to visit her half-sister. Her half-sister lived in the Midwest in the States in a run-down wooden house, was an alcoholic. They got talking. Her half-sister said, "Yeah, look, I've been fired by every employer in this town. No one will hire me. All I can do is drink to take away the misery and the boredom of the days." Jamie learned that her mother was a drug addict, long-term history of drug addiction. And actually, she survived incredibly well in the womb because her mum was taking lots of drugs at the time. She investigated all this, and when she'd met her half-sister, her adopted parents handed her a file, lots of court papers, everything they'd managed to gather about her family and her past. Included there was in the court documents was one. He said, "Jamie's natural mother is dangerously inadequate as a guardian." It describes how she tried, 3 weeks after the baby was born, to go to a pub and just hand the baby over to any of the other customers. Like, "I can't come. You take her. And so eventually, at that point, Jamie was taken into care. It's a very moving article to read. Let me just give you the last couple of sentences from the article. "Sprinkled throughout the documents are reminders of my parents' dedication, determination through delays and complications to keep me. How their love for me was obvious to everyone from the start. I found myself smiling when I read a report that said, 'Jamie's current adoption placement is very stable, safe, nurturing, warm, provides Jamie with love. The current caregivers are very, very much interested in adoption if the child is free. I'm so glad my parents stuck it out. Their love has transformed who I am, transformed my future. Their love has made me who I am today.'" Now, that is, in one sense, a strong example. But actually, every Christian who's thoughtful would say, that's my testimony. We can all write the story, what might have been, upon our lives. Actually, if you're here, you're still thinking these things through, you wouldn't yet call yourself a Christian, you're not persuaded. I can't explain it in 30 seconds, but to know that Jesus Christ has died for you, to know that God himself has emptied or left behind his security, his wealth, given up everything, to enter this world and in Jesus Christ die for you because he loves you, is utterly transforming. It gives you the power to live a very different life. And for those of us who are Christians and think, well, actually it's quite hard work to love people at church, to love people at the office, or you must be joking. Actually, when we consider again what might have been and actually how much we've been loved, there is an extraordinary power for transformation in that simple message that we love because God has loved us in Jesus Christ. It's utterly transforming. And sometimes we just need to remember that. And what might have been if we're to love others. Let me lead us briefly in prayer. Father, we're scratching the surface here of what it means to be a person who loves. What is evident is that from your position as the Lord of all this earth, all you care about is how we respond to your love in Jesus Christ and how we love others. We may be exceptionally gifted, exceptionally talented in all sorts of ways, in worldly gifts, in Christian sort of churchy gifts. But unless we're repeating, modelling, echoing the love that you've shown us in Jesus Christ, it counts for nothing. So, Father, help us to do that, knowing that we've been loved wonderfully so we could show that love to others. We pray it in Jesus' name. Amen.